we're going to be beginning a Vino Malcano. And as you know, a Vino Malcano plays a crucial role in this period of the year. Once we start saying Slichot, we're going to be saying a Vino Malcano. Then we're going to be going from Slichot to Rosh Hashanah. We say Avinu Malkeinu, Yisaret Yemei Tshuva, we say Avinu Malkeinu, and in Yom Kippur, we say Avinu Malkeinu. So it's really a, very much a front and center tefillah for this time of year. And in many ways, it captures the Jewish imagination. Yes?
Why don't we say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos?
Why don't we?
Yeah.
You mean, for example, if it's Rosh Hashanah that falls? Right. We're going to see that.
Okay.
Now, let me explain to you how we're going to get there. So the very first thing is that on this page that you're looking at, in the Hebrew on the top, we're going to look at the very inception of Avinu Malkeinu. Okay, that's Gemara. Then after we do that, we're going to talk a little bit more about the history and the differences and so forth between Rabbi Akiva's Avinu Malkeinu and our Avinu Malkeinu. Then what we're going to do specifically is go to a number of Makorot that look like this. Another page. It's a serious introduction that talk specifically about Avinu Malkeinu on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, and even, for example, Avinu Malkeinu when there's a Shabbat involved and so forth. And it's going to really, in a sense, broaden our understanding of what Avinu Malkeinu really is meant to do. Okay? And that will answer your question.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
So, Nadalia, which Avinu Malkeinu do we say? Her Tzibur, her Tanis, or...
Right, that's a very, very good question.
Okay, that's me too.
Right,
every year, I ask my husband every year, I forget.
Yeah, every year that question comes up. But remember, Tzom Gedalia is basically part and parcel of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. So we're saying that material, that, I hate to use the expression, but that trumps that trumps the Ta'anit aspect of the day.
So it's not right. Significant.
Okay. Correct. That's even more significant. Okay? Alrighty, so let's speak.
Were you saying about Avinu Malkeinu and which one to say on Tzom Gedalia?
Yes.
Yeah. So what was the answer?
The one for Aseret Yemei Teshuva. All right.
When I call you
every
that morning,
year.
You'll let me know because I know I'm going
to. No, you will not forget.
Just remember. Here's why you have the question. You have the question because you're sitting there going Tzom Gedalia.
Right.
But you need to get the more meta perspective and look down on Tzom Gedalia and find out where does it fall out in the calendar in the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. There you go. Okay, so that's what's
both.
Key.
So it's covering both, where Tzom Gedalia would only be covering Tzom Gedalia and
Aseret
Yemei Teshuva.
Correct. The Tzom aspect.
Okay.
The leaving out the Aseret Yemei Teshuva.
Remind me, how to make.
That's how to remember.
It's easier for me to remember.
Well,
maybe I'll send out a text on Tzom Gedalia morning to the group, but I probably will forget.
See,
but if I don't forget, that's going
to
be the goal.
The only way to really... in quotation marks, wrap your head around something like this, is to understand it conceptually. Which is why I just try to give you a conceptual lever, so to speak, to lift up that big rock of, what do I do? It's a good question.
Every year I have a question.
I understand that.
You know, it's
a good question because, you know, logic would dictate in either way. And that's why it's the question. All right, let's take a look. Avinu Malkeinu begins a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. It begins in the 2nd century. And the very first person in the world to say any kind of Avinu Malkeinu whatsoever was Rabbi Akiva. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Akiva, as you may remember, is murdered by the Romans in 135 CE, as a result of the failed Bar Kokhba rebellion. And that is the year in which he is murdered. And he's murdered, of course, for teaching Torah. So let's take a look at that actual Gemara. Shuv, Ma'aseh B'Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, this is Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, who was the Gadol Hador. Okay, we're not talking about someone who was, in quotation marks, a small fry. He was considered to be universally the Gadol Hador. So Shuv Ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer. There's another story that took place with Rabbi Eliezer. Sheyarad Livnei Ateva. He went down before the platform for Tefillah. Now let's talk about what we're talking about, what really is happening. In many shuls that you'll go to in Eretz Yisrael, they will still have a decline, okay, going to where the chazan is going to be davening from. The bima. Okay, but when we say bima, we usually think of the shulchan. Okay, but we're talking about basically, I don't know another way to say it, the chazan shtender. Okay, so the chazan shtender, okay, is actually lower than everything else. Okay? Which is why what's one of the things that David HaMelech says, Minimam Akim Karaticha Hashem, I'm calling on Hashem from the depths, because that's how it always was. And if you look at archaeological digs in Eretz Yisrael until today, you will see, if depending on how intact the shul is, you will see the floor going down to the area from whence the Chazan Davin.
When did it stop?
Okay, that I don't actually know. I guess the compensatory mechanism on the architectural level that was put into play was having the bima higher than the chazan's shtender. And therefore, in contrast, here's your shulchan, here's the chazan's shtender. So by definition, the chazan shtender is lower than the shulchan. Okay? That's how, basically, how we sort of made up the difference. Okay? So let's go a little bit further. So we have the Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus Sharad Lifnei Ateva. He went to the Teva. He went down. Otherwise, how do you understand why it says Yarad? Right? Okay, v'amar esrim v'arba brachot v'lo nene. He said 24, not your usual 18 blessings of the Shmoneh Esri, but he said 24. Why? It was, remember, a resoundingly, overwhelmingly agricultural Eretz Yisrael in the 130s. Everybody was a farmer. And what do you think wasn't happening that was destroying their farms? No rain. So everybody was in a fast, and everybody was saying special tefillot. In this case, Rabbi Eliezer came down, added the six different brachot to a davening session that was dedicated to trying to get rid of the lack of geshamim, in other words, to bring about the rain. Okay? However, v'lo nene, he was not answered. Okay. Comes on the scene, Rabbi Akiva. Right? Yarad Rabbi Akiva acharav. Rabbi Akiva came after him. V'yamar. And he said, Avinu malkeinu, ein lanu melech, ela Ata, said, our father, our king, there is no king other than you. The very first time anything remotely related to Avinu Malkeinu was ever said. And then he said, Avinu Malkeinu, lemancha, our father, our king, and because of you, rachem aleinu, please be merciful to us. And then, v'yardu geshamim. Then the rain immediately came down. Interesting. Now, how many Avinu Malkeinus did Rabbi Akiva say?
Three.
Two. Look what it says. Avinu Malkeinu in Lano Melech Ela Ata, and Avinu Malkeinu L'mancha Rachem Aleinu. He said two. How many do we say? 44. We say 44.
Sfarlim do the same as...
Yep. Yep. Now, in the period of the Gaonim...
But if he got his way after two, can you imagine what we can get after 44?
Right. Well, the bigger question is...
Are we at his level?
Why? I mean, why do we need 44? How did two become 44? And by the way, there's even a source where they didn't have 44. They instead had 53. Believe it or not. They had 53. So we go from 2 to our 44, as high as 53. Now, in the time of the Gaonim, it's rather unclear how many they said. In one version of the Siddur of Rav Amram Gaon, and Rav Amram Gaon is in the 9th century, one version of that work, there's 25. Another, there's 27. But one thing is crystal clear. There wasn't 44. Mm-hmm. So somehow we went from 2 to 25 to 44, and even in one instance, as high as 53. Okay? So it's a very interesting kind of thing. All right. The first time that probably most of us in this room, with the exception of myself, we're going to be encountering Avinu Malkeinu is going to be on what day? Rosh Hashanah. So let's go and take a look at that. And that's what this sheet looks like. Don't worry, we're going to go back to this amazing story in English. And the reason why, by the way, I have this story printed out for you instead of my just telling it over is so that you can share it with your family. It's that powerful a story, I believe. All right. So this is Avinu Malkeinu Rosh Hashanah. So, yes.
You said that we would say it the first time Rosh Hashanah, but you say it...
I'm going to say it during Slichot.
Oh, okay.
So on Motzei Shabbat, we don't say it at Slichot. But during the regular days of Slichot, you do.
And women are not obligated for Slichot.
Correct.
At all.
No. Okay.
We shouldn't be up until the morning.
It's one of the non-PC classic guy jokes who go to shul. Mm-hmm. And it goes, it's has 1,001 variations. Okay? Okay, maybe I'll tell you later. All right, at any rate.
I'm curious.
Avinu Malkeinu Rosh Hashanah. So, one of the first people to talk about Avinu Malkeinu and Rosh Hashanah.
One question, going back to the sleepless, sorry. But a lot of women go just Motzei Shabbos and forget the rest of the week. Do you get credit for doing that, or it's just nonsense for the women to go at all?
Oh, no. You certainly get credit. Anytime there's a mitzvah say that a woman is not mechuyevet in, and she chooses to participate in it, she gets, in quotation marks, credit for it.
Now, what about saying sleepless at home without a minion?
Perfectly fine.
That's allowed also.
Absolutely. Sure. Okay. 100%. There's no problem whatsoever.
And can we say it any time, or do we have to say the same time constraint?
Well, any time you want.
So if I want to daven at 9 o'clock in the morning, I can say it then too?
Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's no problem whatsoever.
Just curious.
No, there is no problem
curiosity
whatsoever.
Curiosity did to the cat.
Okay.
And all that satisfaction brought him back.
All right. Now, the Beit Yosef... All right, so first of all, let me explain to you what... Again, because this is the way you're going to remember it. You may not remember this person said X and that person said Y. But let me tell you what the machloket is. The machloket basically is Avinu Malkeinu on Rosh Hashanah going to be the same as Avinu Malkeinu on any other day? Or is it going to be different?
Well, isn't it the same except Yom Kippur?
Well, another way to say it is it the same thing as Yom Kippur? Is it the same thing as a Ta'anit? Okay?
Well.
So that's the question.
But it's all the same word. I'm not, but think of
where you are when it's the beginning of Elul, when you first start doing Avinu Malkeinu, and think about what you're begging.
Correct.
Him for
at Yom Kippur.
And then right.
But let's have the texts speak, because one side is going to say that, you know what, on Rosh Hashanah there are certain things we do not say. Mm-hmm. In Avinu Malkeinu. And it's not the same as Yom Kippur. And the other side is going to say, no. We say exactly the same words because it's the text of Avinu Malkeinu that has become, so to speak, holy over time, sacrosanct, and we don't change the text. But let's look at it on the inside. Okay, let's look at the Beit Yosef. Now, who was the Beit Yosef, guys? Rav Yosef Karo. What is his most famous work?
Spot.
Correct. What's his most famous work? Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. Before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he spent 40 years writing the Beit Yosef. Okay? Now, what took place was this. His Talmidim said, Rebbe, the word we would use in English would be, the Beit Yosef is too discursive, which means it's very, 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 very long, and very deep, and very, filled with thick research.
Almost daunting, or not really?
It's well, I love it, but it can be daunting. Okay, so they said to him, "Here's our problem, Rebbe. We want to paskin according to your view." But we're not really sure what you've said. We're not all able to figure that out. Mm-hmm. So he said, you know what? I'll make things really easy on you guys. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch is basically a presi, in Hebrew a tamsit, of the Beit Yosef. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's different than the Beit Yosef, but most of the time it's like the Beit Yosef.
Like cliff notes of the
Beit? Yeah. And you would have thought that's where it ended. That's where the conversation
stopped.
Is that
why you call it Kitzer Shulchan
Aruch? No, we're not there. We're nowhere there yet. So out comes the Shulchan Aruch. And as far as the Beit Yosef was concerned, as far as Rav Yosef Karo was concerned, everything was ganz tov. Of course, he didn't speak Yiddish. But everything was good. Okay? Except within a little more than 50 years or so, suddenly on the Shulchan Aruch, there were over 80 Mefarshim explaining to you what he meant when he said what he said. So even the Shulchan Aruch itself became expanded. Okay, that's. And then finally, much later on, in the 19th century, you get to a variety of works that summarize the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so that you don't have to walk around with, you know, like basically half a library. Okay, you can walk around with the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch by Shlomo Gottfried. Okay, but again, it's very, very good, but it's not the same kind of experience as seeing the original text. But if you need a psak, Rav Moshe Zatzal said, you can never go wrong with the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. Rav Moshe Feinstein said so. Okay, so let's look in the highlighted words in the Beit Yosef. It says this, V'nira li, it seems to me. Now, nira li is always tendentious. It means, I know there are those who disagree. Mm-hmm. Okay? Nira li is, in modern texting, I-M-H-O, in my humble opinion. Which, of course, means that there are those who disagree. So, V'nira li, the Sha'ar Bakashot, the rest of the requests, Sha'omrim ba'avinu malkeinu, that we say in Avinu Malkeinu, Omrim b'Rosh Hashanah. We say the majority of them. You ready? And if you want to star this so that you stay focused on this, this is really important, because this is one side. Aval chatanu lifanecha. But to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Yom HaDin, chatanu lifanecha, v'chein chayotze bo. And those things that are similar in kind, okay, davar sheyesh bo hoda'at chet, something where we're recognizing and telling and declaring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yep, we did chata'im, ein omrim. You don't say, says the Beit Yosef, when? On Rosh Hashanah. Me'ata'am, right, for the same reason that she'ein omrim, that you don't say on Rosh Hashanah, what, everybody? Vidui. When do you say vidui?
Yom Kippur.
Or Anatanit. But you don't say it on Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah, after all, is it's a happy Yom Tov of sorts. Okay?
But we do. It's been a while since I had Avin Malkeinu, but there's a Avin Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. So we're telling him that we're reminding him that we did hate.
Right.
Right.
But he's saying we shouldn't.
Correct, because you don't say vidui. So when you say Avin Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha, it's vidui like. All right, number one. And secondly, we're going to see this gets developed. And that's why this is so good to get a sense of what really is going on with the Avinu Malkeinu. Okay? You also don't want to give, so to speak, ammunition to the Mekatreg, to the Satan. Okay? Now, we know that he's hanging out there.
So then why do you do it on Yom Kippur, which is... more formal.
Ah, okay, good for you. Because what do we say? Kianu amecha, salach lanu, kaper lanu, machal lanu. We've already put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. Okay, big time. So this is it. This is the only chance we're going to have to wipe the slate clean. That's why you do it on Yom Kippur.
So why don't we just add those words on Rosh Hashanah?
Of what? Slach Hanukkah? Oh, because it's not a day of Kapara. We're not there yet. So here's what
leading up to it.
Here's what basically happens. Based on, I guess you would say, years of study of Rav Soloveitchik's works on Tshuva, here's what you basically wind up with conceptually. Right now, we're in Elul.
Mm-hmm.
Elul is the time where we sort of start thinking that, maybe this past year I have not been so I after all.
We look towards ourselves, how to improve.
Correct. I had a lot of resolutions. Mm-hmm. I was going to do X, I was going to do Y, I was going to do Z, and maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it didn't happen, right? So maybe all of us were really good last year. Maybe for a few days after Yom Kippur, we had no nivul peh, even driving on the Belt Parkway.
Wow.
Okay. Even when we got cut off at the RFK Bridge entrance. Okay. We were really good.
Tell me about it.
And then, what I call the Yom Kippur effect. After two weeks, 3 weeks.
They say the same thing about New Year's resolutions.
Correct. But I didn't even make it to Hanukkah. Oh, no. Okay? So that's Elul. Elul is sort of the dawn. Dawning of recognition that, as a lot of people like to say, would have, could have, should have.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a time of the year to say would have, could have, should have, that's Elul. But you're not doing tshuva yet. You're preparing yourself to do tshuva.
Mm-hmm.
Comes Rosh Hashanah, Rav Soloveitchik says, you're not doing tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. What are you doing on Rosh Hashanah? You're doing hirhurei teshuva. It's finally, after all that preparation of Elul, it's finally hitting you that I've got to do tshuva for real. I looked at myself in the mirror and I didn't necessarily like the picture I saw. And I've really got to do tshuva. So it's a recognition of tshuva. Comes the next period. So we have two periods so far, right? Elul, Rosh Hashanah. Comes the next period. What do we call the next period? Seret Yomei Tshuva. So this is it, man. This is when we are really going gangbusters and we are really doing tshuva, all in preparation for Yom Kippur. And at that point, we sort of say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you think of that transition? Mm-hmm. I really tried. I went from, you know, finally admitting, yeah, I should have done things really differently, to the dawn of tshuva, hirhurei tshuva, right? I was thinking deeply in my heart about doing tshuva, and then I've been doing tshuva, and then comes the crown of kapara, the happiest day of the year, which people don't realize because they're chalashim, but it's the happiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, where we get slicha, mechila, and kapara. It's the one day of the year that we can ask for kapara. Okay? Yes.
And let's say, like, I'm only saying this, I would never do this if I did. My parents would forgive me. But let's say, because I know it stands out, it says, you know, in the Al-Khayt, you say, for the sins I did to my parents and teachers. Right? Okay. Let's say on Monday, I got into a fight with my mother, and I'm really letting her have it. Okay? And my mother's not listening to this. And Wednesday, I'm like, you know, I really was having a bad day Monday. I said, can I, like, do my own little al-chayt, like?
Sure.
Oh, you can.
Can always do tshuva.
But can I say those exact words?
Or if just that's
say,
oh, what God, works.
Forgive me, please forgive me.
Well, if that's what works for you, why not? Uh-huh. Why not? Don't forget. One of the things that should be emerging after all of our studies together is that you've got a relationship with God. So think about how you speak to someone you love, okay? There's a variety of different ways you do it. Sometimes it's a little bit more formulaic than others, because that's what works. You know, because you learn after you're married for a long time that it's really not a good idea to say to your spouse, not that, you know, I need to talk to you, but like, the guy or the girl, depending on who it is, walks in the door, it's really not a good idea to jump all over them, no matter how upset you are. Okay? Because you know right away what's going to happen, whether you're sitting on the male side or the female side, boom, the wall goes up. And you're not going to listen. So, you learn different ways to get to it. So, for you, the way you want to deal with, you know, chatati aviti pashati against your parents would be to say something formulaic and it works for you. Go for it. Alright?
And here's another question.
Go for it.
So for the al-chayt regarding your parents, I don't know, remember the Hebrew wording. So supposing somebody doesn't have parents, and as I'm thinking, I probably answered my own question, but year one, they don't have parents, they say the al-chayt, they have the kapara, the slate is wiped clean. But what happens year two if they don't have parents anymore? They can't sin against parents that don't exist.
Okay.
Although, we can say that if you don't elevate the neshama, that could be the form of sinning, maybe?
Okay, but I have a much simpler answer. So, notice how the lashon of the al-chayt, is it singular or plural?
Plural.
Ah. Al chet shechatanu. On the chet that we collectively, mm-hmm. as Klal Yisrael, sinned. So, Baruch Hashem, I'm willing to bet, and, you know, we can all put our money on the table right now, a lot of the different things that are in the al chet, Baruch Hashem, we never did.
It's true. I used to say that when I read English.
Not only didn't we do it last year, okay, I have a strong suspicion we've never done it. Please raise your hand if you're a murderer.
Well, they say that if you embarrass somebody, it's likely murder. Like, and then
fine.
I thought you've killed a bug.
Sure, that's not a murder.
That's not
a okay? murder. So obviously, you're not a murderer. Obviously, I'm going to put myself on a line. You weren't involved with Gilead riot mm-hmm. and so forth. And yet.
We say it.
So that answers your question. Yes.
But isn't it to bring up an awareness, just like when I read your Parsha, when Miriam said Lashon Hara, allegedly, about her brother.
Right.
It's all just to bring the awareness.
Of course.
Of what you're capable of and what you could have done and how it is perceived by others.
Yes.
So sometimes you do it so often
you don't realize it's said anymore.
Right.
Well, that's the big problem.
So this helps us guard ourselves.
As Chazal say, the first time you do something that is an out-and-out sin, you sit there and go, wow, I feel it's... like, how did I do that? Second time you do it, wasn't so bad. Yes. The third time, it's a mitzvah.
You get lowly,
no? Okay? Okay, now, so we have the Shulchan Aruch with the Beit Yosef. What does he say? We use an altered version on Rosh Hashanah. But you know, and I know, that we do not.
We say the same
Avinu Malkeinu. Let's look inside. This is actually from the Shulchan Aruch, right? But see where it says those words, Haga? Mm-hmm. Haga means it's the Ramah, the great Ashkenazi posek of Moshe Isserles. And look what he says. V'nohagin lomar Avinu Malkeinu al ha-seder. Okay? Mm-hmm. We don't change things. So it may be the Shulchan Aruch and the Beit Yosef said we do, but Nohagin, our custom in 16th century Poland, and remember the Ramah becomes the posek for Ashkenazim for all time. Okay, even though it was 16th century Poland, it's equally relevant 500 years later. And we don't change it.
Hmm. Yes? It's different from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur.
No. This is all about Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Oh.
Okay.
But then if somebody... No. Okay, forget it.
Now, notice also, because one of you asked this question, you can ignore that little gimel there. I kind of left it out. It sort of should have been taken out, rather. V'im hu Shabbat, if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, ein omrim oto. Why? Well, now you go back to what the Beit Yosef said. Since we don't say the vidui, right, on Shabbat, right, except at the very end in the Ila on Yom Kippur, that falls out on Shabbat, so we don't say it here. Now, you ready? So those are the two views. Yes, I say a regular Avinu Malkeinu, which is who? The Ramah. Uh-huh. No, I don't say a regular Avinu Malkeinu, which is the Beit Yosef. Those are the canons. Now we're going to drop down a level to major poskim. Major poskim, but no one as big as the Ramah or the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? First, Chaye Adam. Those of you who went to high school, okay, a Jewish high school, you probably learned a little bit of Chaye Adam. Very, very, very important work. One of the most important of the, I guess you might say, handbooks of halacha. Here's what he says. Ula achar tefilat shacharit. This is all talking about what day?
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah. After tefilat shacharit, omrim avinu malkeinu. You say it. However, what does he say? V'yesh shekatvu. There are those who write. The yidaleg that you say it in part, right? Like
what part?
Like you leave out what? V'lo yomar avinu malkeinu chatana lefanecha.
Just that one sentence?
No, and anything else dealing with anything dealing with chet.
Okay.
Lefi. Now he's going to take this directly from the Beit Yosef. Lefi she'asur lomar vidui b'Rosh Hashanah. It's usher. It doesn't fit with the Yom Tov quality of the day. And then, v'im chal v'shabbat, ein omrim klal avinu malkeinu. Okay? Next, Shulchan Aruch HaRav, from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. one of the most important svarim in the world of psak. Okay, remember the non-PC commercials for Levi's rye bread? You don't have to be Jewish to enjoy Levi's rye bread. And they would have a Native American, and they would have an African American, they'd have an Asian, etc., a Buddhist, whatever, right? So you don't have to be Lubavitch to paskin like the Shulchan Aruch Harav. I remember when I first started at YU, so I went over to Rav Mandelbaum. He was the librarian at Yeshiva University's library, Alav HaShalom. Big, big, big Talmud Chacham. And I said to him, you know, my wife, not you, my wife packed me a certain amount of cake, you know, or cookies, whatever it was, but I'm not really sure that I have enough to say a bracha achrona. So people tell me that, you know, you're really a Baal Halacha, so can you help me out? So he said, sure, come on over.
Share the cookies.
So what did we do? He goes to the Shulchan Aruch Harav. And he opens it up, and I see right there it says Lubavitch, and I go, bong, bong, bong. We have a problem here. And I say to him, as only a young man could say to his bona fide total Talmud Chacham, I said to him, well, how come we're going to this Sefer? Why are we going to the Mishnah Brewer? And he looks at me, and this happened back in 1975, 76. And obviously, if I can relate it so clearly, it made a huge impression, which is really a patch on the punim, because he looks at me and he goes, why not the Mishnah Brewer? Because guess who the Mishnah Brewer quotes all the time? The Shulchan Aruch Harav. Mm-hmm. So he looks at me.
The Mishnah Brewer came after?
Yeah. So he looks at me and he goes, if it was good enough for the Mishnah Brewer, I guess it's good enough for us. So that's...
How red did you get?
Red? You know, it's like, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Like, I turn purple. You know, but he didn't do it to embarrass me on purpose. But I'm just telling you how important the Shulchan Aruch Harav is. Here's what he says. You ready? Now, the Shulchan Aruch is going to do exactly what the Ramah said, which is what? We say it complete. Mm-hmm. And look what he says. V'noagim lomar avinu malkeinu al haseder. We say it the way it is. Mm-hmm. However, V'yesh shemedaglin, there are those who shorten it, Barash Hashanah, Avinu Malkeinu, Chatanu Lefanecha, they leave that out. And everything else dealing with what? Chet. Lefi she'en amrim vidui Barash Hashanah. Okay, why? Now, nobody's explained why we don't say vidui on Rosh Hashanah. You ready? Here you go. Shelo litain pit chon peh. You don't give Satan ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the beauty, and you can already see why this is so wonderful, the beauty of the Shulchan Aruch Harav, he gave you a why. Why, Rebbe? He just told us why. Okay? Aruch HaShulchan, last page. So, now, interestingly enough, the Aruch HaShulchan goes in a direction you would not really have thought. He says this, V'achar Chazar HaShatz, after Chazar HaShatz, of the, right, in terms of Shacharit, Potchin Ha'aron, we open up the Aron Kodesh, V'omrim, and we say, Avinu Malkeinu, okay, K'shechal B'chol, that's when Rosh Hashanah falls out when? During a regular everyday day. V'enomrim Avinu Malkeinu Chatan Ulfenecha. But nonetheless, you don't say Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. Like who? Like the Beit Yosef. Huh. You never would have expected that in a million years. Because no. Aruch HaShulchan was in Lithuania. And he wasn't a Sephardi. Ve'en omrim Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha v'lo ketavnu b'sefer slicha. Alright? V'lo ki ein banu masim. You don't say any of that. Why? So here, you got to go back to the reasoning of the Alter Rebbe, the first Rebbe of Lubavitch. And what did he say? because it gives ammunition for the Mekatrek, for Satan. Okay? All right. Last but not least, by way of introduction, and next week we're going to actually get to the whole piece of the Avinu Malkeinu. So bring a, if you have a maksor, bring a sitter, it's all there. All right, so this is one of the most, why does it speak to me so powerfully? One of the reasons is this story. Okay, it's really, really powerful. While interred in the concentration camp, the saintly Klausenberger Rebbe, Zatzal. This is Rebbe Yekutiel Yehuda Halberstam. Okay, I have a personal connection with the other part of the Halberstams that created the Babavert dynasty.
Mm-hmm. So okay. How are they with the Satmar?
They're very tight. No, they're very close.
So I'm saying they're cousins or what?
They're cousins. Right. This is Sans. Okay, you've heard of Sans. You might have even heard of Klausenberg. Klausenbergers are in Jersey City. And I'll tell you a story, but I don't have time to tell you a story about that. But let me just go with this story. So this is Rabbi Yekutiel Yehuda Halberstam, Zatzal, 1905 to 1994. Now, he was subject because the guards, the Nazi guards, Yimach Shemam, had a particular joy out of causing Der Rabbiner, the rabbi, to suffer. Okay, so he was subject to constant harassment by the cruel guards. In order to, quote, unquote, clean up the ranks and rid the camp of the weak and ill prisoners, every few weeks the commandant would declare a selectia. Selectia sounds like the word selection. Okay, in which all those who were infirm were immediately sent to their deaths. Everyone was lined up in a single file, surrounded by the Nazis. Okay, were holding machine guns. Those who appeared weak were weeded out from the group. Okay? Now, you can't make this up. Ready? This is going to really, I think, be transformative. In one of the rows, the Rebbe, against all the rules of the Selexia, was standing bent over in prayer. So here are the Nazi beasts walking around with their machine guns. And what's the Rebbe doing?
Davening.
He's davening. This was categorically prohibited, was suicidal. Yet the Rebbe was shortly joined by a small group of followers, not all, by the way, his people, but people who just joined him, was praying. What was he saying this time? Which might have been his last moments on earth? He was reciting over and over again, Avinu Malkeinu, Kara Roa Gezar Dineinu, tear up the horrible edict against us. Okay? Those surrounding him repeated the words. The Rebbe then continued with, Avinu Malkeinu Nekom Nikmas Dam Avodecha HaShafuch. Okay? Avenge the blood of your servants that's being spilled. And Avinu Malkeinu Asei Leman Rachamecha HaRabim. Do it because of your great compassion. Now, what does this look like to you? It looks like it's Yom Kippur. It looks like it's Rosh Hashanah. So anyone who witnessed this mind-boggling spectacle would not believe his eyes or her eyes. They did not seem to be in a concentration camp surrounded by death and awaiting execution. They acted as if they were in shul on Yom Kippur and were praying to Hashem. In the midst, and this is the key, because, by the way, Baruch Hashem were not in that concentration camp. But as I've said many times, do each of us feel strongly existential threats? Yes, they're different in kind and degree from the concentration camps. So don't think for even a sec, even a millisecond, that I am diminishing the horror. But you understand why Avinu Malkeinu speaks to us just as loudly as it spoke to the Klausenberger. In the midst of the terror and persecution, the Rebbe was declaring that the Nazis were not in charge. Who was in charge?
Hashem.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They would not determine their future. Only Hashem could make that decision. This is Emunah. This is faith at its apex, at its highest. Now, ready? Of course, you're all going to wonder, what happened to the Rebbe? What happened to the people? The Rebbe and all those who sequestered themselves, and you know, they joined him to recite the Avinu Malkeinu, were spared from death. Isn't that amazing? The Nazis had their plan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had another one. So if you ever wonder about the power of a Vina volcano, and when we say it all those different times, right, beginning with Slichot and so on and so forth, now you have something to, in a sense, spur you on. Why am I saying Avinu Malkeinu?
I'll take it to Hindi and for Eti.
Okay, and what does it mean, and so on and so forth? Mm-hmm. Now you have a Klausenberger, okay? You have a Klausenberger to share the power of this particular tefillah. Mm-hmm. And by all means, please, 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 share it with your children.
I find it very unique that he said that, Nashon HaYisrael, because usually that's what